now. You've got a chance of me actually not sort of standing up here like a zombie, since it's not 9 a.m. How are we doing, people? So what I want to do now is to continue on with this discussion of this particular model of a brain world and talk about gravity on the brain world. So I'm going to look at the behavior of the Einstein equation. So what we showed already was we had our Randall-Sundrum solution. De Sitter space time. Well, we're looking at anti De Sitter space time and gluing together two halves so that at this very sharp peak here in this curvature, we've got our brain world. So, this is what we just talked about earlier this morning. However, our extra dimension, which is labelled by Z, is infinite. Okay, so what we want to do now is to think about gravity. Yes, Callum.
What is it you just got in there? Sorry, can you look
at this thing, it's this factor here. I was on the out. Yeah, I'm just sketching it to show that there's a very sharp, you know, this is what this pre-factor looks like. And it, although it's continuous, its derivative is not, and so it's like this is a sharp profile, and so this is where the brain is. So now I want to ask, what happens if I'm not looking at this exact solution? What else do I get? Okay. So I'm going to do this in a rather simplified context. I'm not going to do this in full perturbation theory in all its glory, because that's actually, I mean, quite a long calculation. It's not, you know, it's conceptually straightforward, but there's quite a lot going on there. And I thought I would take a couple of shortcuts instead by saying I'm going to use that Israel formalism, the Gauss-Kagaczy formalism that we've already found out about. I'm going to say that my brain energy momentum is going to be what we just calculated for the background solution plus some extra piece where I'm assuming that this is small, and then, you know, that's heuristically. And I'm also going to say that nothing happens to the bulk. So again, I'm not sure I emphasize this. We say that where this, the brain world is the brain. And away from the brain world, like out here, is the bulk. So I'm making simplifying assumptions here. I'm going to assume my bulk does not get changed. I'll come back to that at the end and say a little bit about what happens if it is altered.
I'm sorry. Yep. I'm a bit confused. I thought you're plotting the exponential graph there, and now you're saying part of that graph is the brain and part is
I'm saying the brain is at z equals zero. That's what,
oh.
Here, I've drawn this line at z equals zero, yeah? So if I did it in the context of the sketch that I had before, this would be the brain here, and the rest is the bulk. So the bulk is higher dimensional, the brain is lower dimensional. The brain is the submanifold, the bulk is the manifold. So here I'm going to assume, this is really just so I can kind of do this in one calculation on the board, that the bulk that's what the Riemann tensor of anti-de Sitter space looks like. And I've got the right slide. It's a constant curvature space, which means that the Riemann tensor has a very simple format in terms of being proportional to combinations of the metric. So that's pure anti-de Sitter. I'm saying that whatever happens to the brain, it's remaining pure anti-de Sitter out in the bulk. And what I'm going to do is use the Gauss-Kadatsky formalism to try and get some information about the Einstein equations. So remember in Gauss-Kadatsky, the Gauss equation, we had that, we identified our higher dimensional Riemann tensor, our lower dimensional Riemann tensor in terms of a higher dimensional Riemann tensor. So I want to look at like the Ricci tensor because I'm thinking about the Einstein equations on the submanifold. And if you remember, it consisted of two pieces. There was the projection of the higher dimensional Riemann tensor onto the submanifold. And then there were extrinsic curvature terms. So,
can you use a trace on the five-dimensional Riemann tensor? Oh, no, sorry.
No. I've done it.
Yeah.
So, what I've done is, remember, the four-dimensional Riemann tensor was the five-dimensional Riemann tensor with all of its sort of legs projected down onto the submanifold. And so that means you've got four H's, but of course the Ricci tensor itself is the contraction on the first and third, so that's what's going on here. And then you've got the extrinsic curvature terms. So here, I can write, remember my first fundamental form is like G plus NN in this case. So I've got HOC, HBD, the five-dimensional Ricci tensor. Plus the KK terms. So what I've done now is this is going to be my building block for Einstein's equation in the brain world. This is, of course, something with the five-dimensional Einstein tensor. I've got something involving normal components of the Riemann tensor and something with the extrinsic curvatures. So this is now just manipulated the Gauss equation into a format where I can now input, I should specify that's five there, where I can actually input the form of the individual parts. I know what K is from the Israel equations, and I know what the Riemann and Ricci tensors are because I've assumed the bulk is unchanged. So this Randall-Sundrum model is what we call Z2 symmetric, which means that it's this mirror image. So what that means is that delta KAB is equal to twice the extrinsic curvature evaluated on one side. So that's the first thing, and then we know that delta KAB is minus delta K HAB is equal to the stress tensor. So that tells me that if I take the trace of this, I've got delta K here, and I've got minus 4 delta K there, so that's minus 3 delta K is 8 pi Gs. So delta K AB, which is twice K plus AB, is equal to 8 pi G SAB minus 1/3 S HAB. So that allows me now, I've got my the value of my K, so I now know what these terms are, and then I use the expression for the Riemann and Ricci tensors to get me the other terms. So I've got all the ingredients that I need for this Gauss equation. So let me first look at the five-dimensional Ricci tensor. If I take a look at this and contract on A and C, I get phi from this term, phi GBD minus a GBD from that term. So that tells me that first term is 4k squared times HAB. The second term, if I now substitute in here for using for the Riemann tensor, using this expression, you can see that the first term contracts the sort of G, what this is first and third indices, gives me an n squared, right, which is a sort of minus one there. And then these terms here are telling me that I'm taking, for example, this would be GED with the NE here. That would mean I was contracting this normal with that first fundamental form, which gives me zero. So this second term simply picks up my n squared. So I end up with a 4k squared from the first Ricci term and then minus a k squared from the second Riemann term. And then the other terms, I say, well, I know what k is, so I'm subtracting off 8 pi g, subtracting off 8 pi g, the minus 8 pi g s over 3. And then my KAB is 4 pi G SAB minus 4/3 pi G SHAB. that's just substituting in. Actually, I mean 4 5 g. Sorry, because that's twice k plus. So that's the KAB term, and then the final piece is just going to be 4 pi g squared into SAC minus 1/3 S. HAC SCB minus 1/3 S HCB. So that's what I get. Terms are just giving me something proportional to the induced metric, and then I've got all of these different S squared terms. So I've got something where I pick up two individual S's there. I've got plus 1/3 S SAB from this piece here, and then I've got minus 2/3 S, another minus 2/3 S SAB, and then finally the trace S squared terms cancel, because here I've got minus 4 pi g over 3 squared S squared. And here I've got plus 4 pi g over 3 squared S squared HAB. So overall, I end up with simply SAC SCB minus 1/3 SSAB. So that's what I've got overall, given my expression for SAB. Now I want to put in the fact that I'm perturbing near this exact background. I'm only going to keep to linear order in TAB here. So that means my RAB again, if I put in my energy momentum tensor, simply write down exactly what the energy momentum tensor is, and then I'm just going to keep the first two terms. So you can see that here I've got 1 over 4 pi g, so all the terms that do not have t in them are going to have 1 over 4 pi g squared. Just going to cancel off with that prefactor sitting out in front there. So I'm going to end up with an HAB into, so here I get 3k all squared, so that's 9k squared, from that top line. And from the second line, I've got a third times 12 times 3, so that's minus 12k squared. So that's my zeroth order term. And then for the cross terms, things involving just one copy of t, I'm going to get only cancel off one of the 4 pi g's. I'm then going to have a k. And then I've got to pick up all my cross terms here. So the top line, if I look at the cross terms, I'm going to get 3k TAB from this cross term and another one from that cross term. So I've got 6k TAB here on that piece. And then the second line is going to give me minus 3k on 3 THAB. So that's minus k T HAB. And then the other one gives me minus 4k TAB. So if I put that all together, you see that I've got plus 3, plus 9, minus 12, so they all cancel. And then the next line, is 6k minus 4k is 2k, so if I pull out that 2k, I've got 8 pi gk into TAB minus a half T HAB. In other words, I've actually got Einstein's equations because I can rewrite that, take the trace to find the Ricci scalar, and I get GAB as 8 pi G TAB. Okay? Remind you there's an order t squared. So in fact, in spite of things looking a bit unpromising to start with this infinite extra dimension, I've shown via this argument that you get Einstein gravity. Okay? So there are certain questions you could ask me at this point, like why did you, you said you were assuming nothing happened in the bulk. Why should that be, okay? So obviously, if you shouldn't really assume that, okay? So if you do not, if you allow the bulk to be perturbed, you get an additional source in the Einstein equations. This term is trace-free. And it comes from, not surprisingly, this sort of projection of the Riemann tensor onto the brain, this sort of, these mixed components, normal and parallel. So it's actually a projection of the Weyl tensor. Onto the brain. So this is the sort of simplest case. I wanted to try and make it things reasonably straightforward so we could do it on, well, two boards. But if you try and step back and make things more complicated, you still get the same answer with just a few twiddles, yes?
Have you said gate one?
Sorry, have I said?
Gate one.
have I set pay to one? No, I didn't want to set pay to one. I apologise. Yes, thank you very much for spotting that. This is we. This it has an identification of thank you of the Newton's constant as being GK. K is 1 over the anti-de Sitter length scale. Thank you. So this is G over L. And therefore, it's really good. I would have unravelled in a bit when I was trying to discuss what happened with gravity. So what this is saying is that you do, in fact, get something that looks like four-dimensional Einstein gravity on the brain. But the gravitational constant, of course, because the five-dimensional gravitational constant has length cubed, and the four-dimensional Newton's constant has length squared, there's obviously got to be a 1 over L in this relation, and it's the anti-de Sitter length scale that shifts the gravitational constant between the five and the four dimensions. So that's what gives us four-dimensional Einstein gravity on the brain. Another way of deriving this is by looking at the perturbation theory. So you look at that Lichnerowicz operator in this background, and there you can see this here is only talking about the brain. So, I'll give you a few warnings of what I haven't done. So this is a brain equation. This is a four-dimensional equation. It's not telling you what is happening in the bulk. So the bulk is encoded in this E mu nu that I haven't really shown you what it is. But even as you can imagine, because you projected this Riemann tensor onto the brain, you kind of lost a lot of the fine detail of the bulk information. But what I want to tell you is that if you do perturbation theory properly, you still get this same result to leading order. Which means that if you ask what R mu nu is, or you try and sort of say, you know, what happens to the Ricci tensor, which would in perturbation theory be your wave operator, if you like, the graviton, you find that your answer is sourced by you've got this sort of zero mode. Plus a Kaluza-Klein continuum of massive tensor modes. So this is your zero mode source, and these couple to T mu nu minus T over 3. E to mu nu, which is the right tensor structure for a massive mode. So your gravity is Einstein gravity with corrections. So the thing that's interesting is you would say, when I've written down there, Kaluza-Klein theory normally, is this one of the questions, Carl?
I have no question.
I have no question, no. Kaluza-Klein theory normally has a tower of massive states. Where the mass is set by the length of the internal dimension, but it's a regular tower, one of states. This thing has a continuum because the extra dimension is infinite. But in spite of the fact that although it's a continuum, the actual effect when you've integrated over all these modes is actually to have a sort of power law correction to Newton's potential gravity. I call Newton's gravity. It's basically you start off with 1 over r, if you've got gm over r as your Newtonian potential, you get 1 plus, I think the factor is 2/3. K squared r squared. So it's one of these, it's kind of quite interesting seeing how all the pieces go together. But normally, you would expect, if you had a massive state, a massive particle typically has an exponential cutoff. When you're looking at the range of a massive particle, you've got this typical e to the minus mr cutoff in your potential. Here, you've got a continuum of masses all the way down to m equals zero. So you're summing over the effect of all of these exponential fall-offs all the way down to m equals zero. And this sum gives you a power law correction to gravity. So it's kind of interesting when you look at the details, seeing how this all fits in. But what I wanted to get across is the fact that I took shortcuts to try and convince you that Einstein gravity was what you got on the brain. You could legitimately have poked thrown stones at parts of the argument. You could have said, well, what's going on with the bulk? You know, why this is only a brain equation. But if you do the calculation in full gory detail, it backs up that rather quicker method, which tells you what the leading order behavior of gravity is. So strangely enough, you have a situation here where you've got an infinite extra dimension, and yet gravity still looks four-dimensional. And it's really because of the warping into the extra dimension. So intuitively, we can think of this as being gravity localizing on the brain due to the warp factor. And in fact, if you look, as I say, at that wave equation, the perturbation equation, you can sort of get it into a Schrodinger form where there's sort of like a sort of delta function dip thing where the brain is. So bizarrely, this very extended space has given us something that looks relatively normal. I just wanted to also tell you a little bit about cosmology. Brains. Because, of course, you could have gone back to the calculation I did, kept the t-squared terms, and found an effective Einstein equation on the brain, and you would have been able to get your generalization of the Friedman equation. But, in fact, the Friedman-Robertson-Walker universe is one of these very special space-times, which is exactly soluble. So you put in the symmetries of the Friedman universe. Remember, you're solving for the brain and bulk. And you find that you can solve the bulk equations exactly. And you find that your bulk space is Schwarz, is a black hole. It's Schwarzschild anti-de-Sitter. The brain follows a time-dependent trajectory in this black hole bulk. So if you kept one of these flat Ramachandran brains, so if you had a flat cosmology, you would have a bulk. This would be like a planar black hole. And your brain would be at some R of tau. So your metric is k squared r squared minus some constant over r squared dt squared. So that's what your cosmology looks like. So this is the bulk. It's a black hole, because I've got a sort of m over r squared type of term. This is my spatial sections of the universe. They're parallel to the brain. And then these are the sort of two, the t and r coordinates outside the black hole. But the brain follows some time-dependent trajectory, r of tau, where tau is like the proper time along the trajectory. So the induced metric or intrinsic metric is d tau squared minus r squared tau dx squared, which is exactly a four-dimensional flat Friedman-Robertson-Walker universe. So that's what a cosmological brain world looks like. Well, in that case, I put it going outwards because I want it to expand. So it's R is getting bigger, so I want an expanding universe. So let me just quickly show you what happens to the Friedman equation. If I write my five-dimensional coordinates of the brain, so I'm making it time-dependent in the RT part of the metric, and just keeping the spatial coordinates, then the four velocity of this trajectory, so I'll say that's u, is t dot r dot 0. And of course, because it's a four velocity, that means that v t dot squared minus r dot squared over v equals 1, where v is that short potential here. So I need, if I'm going to calculate my extrinsic curvature, I need a normal. Is look at something that's going to give me the 0 when I contract it with UA. So in fact, if I check what if I check what the length of that normal is, I see that it is actually already 1. So then if I look at my extrinsic curvature in the x directions, so I'm obviously picking components where n has a 0. Then that's just going to be proportional again to the Christoffel symbols. Proportional to my the derivative of my GIJ. And so it's something proportional to GIJ. So that's my KIJ, but then of course if I assume Z2 symmetry, then I know that Kij is going to be equal to 4 pi g Sij minus a third S Hij. So I can relate my extrinsic curvature to the local energy momentum source on the brain. So once again, I'm going to say that my source S naught naught is going to be is 6k over 8 pi g plus rho, and then a typical pressure is going to be 6k over 8 pi g minus p. So I'm thinking of a cosmological brain world here. A cosmological brain world is homogeneous and isotropic, so I've only got two components of a fluid, an energy density, and a pressure. So that's what I'm imagining from a cosmological perspective. So my source, S mu nu, background brain energy momentum and the perfect fluid source for in lying parallel to the brain. So S is equal to 6k over 2 pi g from the first piece, plus rho minus 3p. So S ij minus the third S. Hij. So I can see here I've got the I've got to take 6kg mu nu minus over 8 pi g. I wish now I'd kept the 4 on the top. And then I've got to minus a third of this, which is simply 8k over 8 pi g. So that's minus k over 4 pi g. Hij, actually I probably should have called those g's up there, h's. And then the p's cancel, and I simply get minus rho on 3, hij. So.
It's UU.
So this bit has only the 0,0 component, and this bit has no 0,0 component. So this is like the IJ. This is completely the spatial part lying in the brain. But then what I've obviously now computed the right-hand side of this equation. I know the left-hand side, but of course it's given in terms of t dot. So finally, I know that vt dot squared minus r dot squared over v is 1. So that tells me that vt dot is equal to v plus r dot squared to the 1/2. Okay? So I just use the fact that I've chosen a proper time coordinate. And I just rubbed it up. Okay, so what I wanted to do was to look at what my Israel equation told me. Got the right-hand side here, so I'll put that down before I actually lose the wretched thing. So I've got k, I'm multiplying by 4 pi g, so I've got k hij minus 4 plus 4 pi g on 3 rho hij. And then on the other side, vt dot was v plus r squared. And I said that v was k squared r squared plus r dot squared to the 1/2. So that was vt dot. And then it was, where did I compute the thing? So it was minus vt dot over 2r. So I got, therefore, that was k. But of course it's delta k, so I've got, change my minus sign there. So it's actually times 1 over r, because delta kab is twice the extrinsic curvature evaluated on one side. So that's times hij. So in other words, my equation of motion is the square root of k squared plus r dot squared on r squared is equal to k plus 4 pi g rho on 3. Oh, minus mu over r squared, sorry. So that's what my cosmological equation is. Now, that's not a conventional form for cosmology, so let me square it. So I cancel off the two terms purely dependent on the anti-de Sitter scale, and I end up with R dot on R squared, and that's just the Hubble parameter squared, equals 8 pi g k on 3 rho, but I said that was the Newton's constant. So I've got the normal Friedmann equation. I've got a rho squared term, and I've also got a term which depends on the bulk, mu on r to the fourth. So this is the brain world Friedmann equation, and you see that it looks like the Einstein-Friedmann equation with some corrections. So the rho squared term is something which is very much coming from the Israel equation. It's something which is the fact that it's the brain world, the fact that you get the square root here and not just r dot and r squared. So you've got this rho squared term, which is like an unconventional cosmology. But another interesting term is this mu over r to the fourth term. This is a bulk term. Rho squared is just brain. That would still be there, even if there was no matter at all in the universe. And this is something that depends on the mass of the black hole. And so that's kind of quite an interesting term. It has the same format as radiation. So remember, if you don't know cosmology, that is, this radiation universe is proportional to 1 over the scale factor to the fourth. So it's like radiation. It's like a radiation term. And it's at a temperature which is governed by the mass of the bulk black hole and the size of the scale factor. And so this actually has an interpretation as a sort of dark radiation term. And some people would like to say that the Randall-Sundrum brain world is an example. It's very analogous to the ADS-CFT correspondence in string theory. So you will be getting a course on this soon, or at some point. What we've got here is we've got an anti-de Sitter space, and we're placing a cutoff at some finite radius. So our anti-de Sitter space, which you'll be finding out today, is something, it's an interesting space. It's a space with a boundary, a time-like boundary. So what you will be doing in the ABS-CFT course is you'll be looking at physics on the boundary, field theory on the boundary, and arguing that it is equivalent in some sense to gravitational physics in the bulk, sort of throughout the whole of ABS space. The Randall-Sundrum universe actually cuts this off. It's just because of the coordinates, it does something slightly strange. It cuts it off at some finite distance, somewhere at some finite point in the interior. And so the interpretation is that you would expect to get additional contributions to your matter, your effective energy momentum tensor, which are dual to things going on in the bulk. So in this case, we've put a black hole in the bulk. We've been talking about black holes having a finite temperature. So this 1 over r to the fourth is like a radiation state of this field theory, so-called, that lives on the boundary. And so there's this idea about things in the bulk, things that we do gravitationally in five dimensions, having some interpretation as from a purely four-dimensional point of view. In this case, this is a four-dimensional radiation source. So this is just a very heuristic hint at this idea of holography. It's saying that you've got some higher dimensional physics, which is your five-dimensional physics, and it is somehow being projected into some trace or signature or something that you can see on a boundary. So that's like a little taste of yes.
There is no curvature term in this Friedman equation?
No, because I put by hand, I wrote down a flat Friedman universe. If you want the curvature, in here, this is where I wrote the Schwarzschild potential. If you have curvature in the universe, you would have some kappa term in there. And so at this point, you would have kappa over r squared plus this lot. And so you would end up with a kappa over r squared here plus. So it's exactly the Friedman equation at this point. So you can add it in. I didn't because I was sticking with taking the Randall-Sundrum flat brain Minkowski vacuum and making it into a flat cosmology. In fact, one of the nice things about brain world cosmology, if you have a closed universe, is that here's your brain, it's spherical, surrounding some kind of black hole horizon. And whenever you try and give a public lecture on cosmology and sort of draw, you know, take a balloon analogy and say an expanding universe is like blowing up the balloon, the galaxies seem to recede because the space is expanding. And then people always get themselves in a muddle because they want to think of the balloon having an inside. And so the great thing about brain worlds is they do. This is, you know, suddenly the balloon does have an inside and there's a black hole in there. So it's kind of nice you can answer those people. So, what's inside the balloon? Well, there's a black hole. Right. Okay, so that's really the end of what I wanted to cover. And I've managed to spin it out more or less into an hour. But I wanted to just sort of ask at the end, are there any sort of other general questions, you know, like either specific to this or is there something else people would just like to ask? I'll throw the floor open to you. Is there something you want to, you know, would have liked to hear a little bit about?
There's in the first relativity class we talked about, the professor talked a bit about this model of the Big Bang where there's basically this brains colliding or something like that.
Did he now? That's a surprise. Yeah? Sorry.
I don't know, I guess I'm just trying to.
Yeah, to put the two together. So I've only talked about a very basic brain world model here. It's a very specific one, and it was put forward by Randall and Sundrum. The reason I chose it is because it's relatively straightforward calculationally. It's pure gravity in five dimensions with a cosmological constant, and we've done everything, we've already covered everything we need to know for me to be able to actually, you know, show you that not only is gravity effectively four-dimensional, but you get some sort of sensible cosmology as well. So, of course, you can make things, well, of course, anybody can always make things more complicated, but you can make these brains more complicated. So you can add more brains in the bulk, you can have more than one brain, you can change the action of the brain. It doesn't just have to be a pure sort of cosmological constant term parallel to the brain. You can add Ricci terms to the brain's action. And what you see, what happens is it alters this argument about finding effective 4D gravity. So using this, I've done it in the very basic bare bones setup. You can add more detail. You can get things that look like Einstein gravity. We've already sort of, I argued that Einstein gravity was modified at short scales. You can also get models in which Einstein gravity is modified at large scales. That's within this toy model context. You can then ask, can you embed something like this into, say, string theory or M theory, and do you get these sort of brains in that case? Now, well, I'm not sure precisely what Neil was talking about, but what one of the models he's been involved in is a particular sort of compactification of M theory, which is this 11-dimensional theory, down to 4 dimensions, but the way you wrap up the extra 7, if my math's right, 7 dimensions is, there's a sort of splitting of scales between 6 of the dimensions and 1 of them, and you get a regime in which the universe looks sort of effectively 5-dimensional. And so there's a sense in which you've got this sort of picture, but it's not quite the same because it's not pure gravity propagating through the bulk. As soon as you go into string theory, as you'll, I guess, see, you have more than just gravity in the bulk. You usually have scalar fields. The simplest one is the string dilaton, but if you're compactifying, you may have other scalar moduli. You've also got gauge fields, p-form gauge fields. There's a lot of stuff going on in the bulk. And so the challenge then is to extract the meaningful fields. So what he was doing was this type of picture, but in this more complicated setup. And so their idea is that the Big Bang is replaced by sort of colliding brains. But there's a lot of problems and questions. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the brain world scenario as well. It's just that the way I would like you, or what I'd like you to take away from it, is that here's something where you can actually do concrete calculations, but it's not saying this is actually the way extra dimensions are hidden, but it gives you a toy model where you can test some features of having large extra dimensions or warped compactifications, because in the setups in which you meet them, say in the context of string theory, usually they're a lot more complicated, there's a lot more going on in the bulk, you've got far less calculational control, and so in the end you always have to make simplifications and do modelling of some sort or another. And this is modelling, keeping sort of being honest about gravity, if you like, but not about everything else. So it's a tool. Any other? Or are you all too hungry?
I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but you said, why can't you see millimeter-sized extra
dimensions? That was that confinement argument, the fact that standard model physics is confined to this hypersurface, so we cannot send particles off the brain to see the extra dimension. The only way we see it is through gravity.
Okay, but is that the same thing as saying we have a small rolled-up dimension if we're living on a brain?
Well, no, because what I've just shown you is this extra dimension is infinite, which is the total opposite, right, of Kaluza-Klein. So, right, I think we should probably stop. But before we go for lunch, I wanted to ask if everybody could just come to the front. I'd like to just have a shot of the class with Callum, as you know, tutors as well. I'm going to